November 20th meeting of the LAC to order, and the first order of business, Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board request to use general contingent appropriation. Commissioner Franz, do you want to give us the background on that?
Mr. Speaker, yes, thank you. As Executive Secretary of the Legislative Advisory Commission, I've offered two items for discussion. The first issue before the LAC is a recommendation by the governor to transfer $102,436.55 from the general contingent appropriation in the general fund to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board to allow for payment of attorney's fees and costs in the United States District Court litigation of Seaton versus Weiner. As you know, the First Amendment case, in First Amendment cases, the prevailing party is entitled to recover attorney's fees and costs from the losing party. The agency and its attorney general representative negotiated a tentative agreement of the fee claim for $100,000 in fees and $2,436.55 in costs. The plaintiff signed the settlement agreement on October 7, 2015. The agreement provides that payment must be authorized on or before November 30, 2015, or the agreement is void. And the plaintiffs can proceed to sue the state again, this time to obtain judgment for attorney's fees. The governor believes it is prudent to accept this settlement, and we are here today so the LAC can make recommendations on this transfer. You should have in your packet some materials like this that have the Campaign Finance Board Disclosure Board at the top, which was distributed to the LAC before this meeting. So at this time, I would ask if there are any recommendations with respect to this particular matter.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Commissioner, I see that Mr. Goldsmith is here. I just have a couple of questions on the issue, if he wouldn't mind coming.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, Mr. Chair, and members. My name is Gary Goldsmith. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Goldsmith, can you tell me who made the decision to fight the lawsuit? Was that dictated by the Attorney General's office? Was that something that came from the board? Where did that come from?
Representative Anderson and members, the Campaign Finance Board is charged with the enforcement and administration of Chapter 10A, which is a part of Minnesota statutes, of course. And under the general concepts of state agency administration of statutes, the agency really doesn't have the right to decide which statutes it should enforce and which statutes it should not, even in the face of some claim that a statute might be unconstitutional. Only when faced with very clear and binding precedent, which would be Supreme Court of the U.S. or the Minnesota Supreme Court, would the board on its own believe that it had the power to ignore a clear statutory requirement. In fact, in Citizens United, when the Supreme Court decided that corporations could use their money to make directly to make independent expenditures on their own behalf, the board was then prepared to recognize that clear precedent in Minnesota because there was simply no way around it. In the particular case of Seaton versus Weiner, the plaintiffs were challenging the Minnesota, what we call the special source aggregate limit. It's that limit on contributions from large givers, lobbyists, and PACs. And at least part of that limit, the part on PACs, had been previously upheld by the Minnesota Supreme Court in a specific challenge to that part. It was a little unclear whether the Minnesota Supreme Court had upheld the whole law or just the PAC component. In the interim, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a decision in a case called McCutcheon versus Federal Election Commission. That dealt with a statute that was different than our aggregate special source limit. Our statute is a limit on recipients of contributions, and limits on recipients have been clearly upheld. However, our aggregate special source limit, which, as you know, says after you hit the special source limit, you can't take any more lobbyist or PAC contributions, and at that point, you can only take half of the usual amount from a donor, so no more large givers. The McCutcheon case was a limit on the donor, and it said after the donor had given so much, the donor couldn't give any more to anybody. So there are parallels, because a donor who gave to about 12 candidates at the federal level then couldn't give to the 13th. On the other hand, in Minnesota, a donor could give to as many candidates as the donor wanted to, If the candidate hadn't reached the limit, or if the candidate wanted to give back one contribution so as to accept a contribution from a different donor. So while there were some parallels and some similarities, the McCutcheon case was not truly on point to the Minnesota law to the extent that an administrative agency, at least an agency taking the perspective that our board does, would feel that we could ignore the statute as written. And so the board enforced the statute as written, and the lawsuit was initiated. And in accordance with what we believe to be our obligation to defend the statute, unless there's clear authority not to, we proceeded to defend the lawsuit through the first formal stage. And that first formal stage was a motion for temporary injunction. And that's where the plaintiffs come in, and they ask the court to stop the board from enforcing the statute. And that's an important stage because it's fully briefed by the parties, so all the legal arguments are laid out, the factual arguments are laid out. The court hears extensive argument in the court in an open proceeding, and then the judge has to make a decision about whether the board should be stopped from enforcing this particular provision or not. And when the court makes that decision, the court has to look at certain things, a very important one of which is, what is the likelihood that the plaintiffs will prevail in the end after we go through a whole trial with everything else that's involved? And in this case, Judge Frank, in May of 2014, ruled against the Campaign Finance Board in the temporary injunction motion, and we were, in fact, enjoined. And the judge concluded that we were not likely to prevail should this matter go all the way to the final conclusion in trial. And so at that point, the board stopped enforcing the law, and for the 2014 election, it was not enforced with respect to large givers. And at that same point, or shortly thereafter, the board made a recommendation to the 2015 legislature to fix the problem so the board wouldn't have to either litigate or deal with it. And through a Senate amendment to the board's technical bill, the problem was actually fixed in the 2015 legislative session, and the matter became moot. So all of the attorney's fees we're dealing with now were from the time the matter was started by the plaintiffs up through the temporary injunction, at which case basically everything stopped because at that point it was clear to the board that we had not only an order to not enforce the law, but grounds to stop recognizing that particular statute.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. And Mr. Goldsmith, I think you said it was May 2014 when the injunction came in place. At any point prior to that, had the Campaign Finance Board come to the legislature to say, hey, this is a problem, we're incurring legal fees, and maybe we shouldn't go down this route? I remember, I think the McCutcheon case, it happened the summer before that came out, and it was very the buzz on all the social media and in the different newspapers and different forms of media sources, they all said clearly Minnesota is out of violation, or out of order with the laws that we have in place. And did you at any point as a campaign finance board have that discussion prior to the May 2014 decision by the judge? Did you ever have any conversation as a board to make a vote to say that we're not going to pursue this, or we're at least going to advise the AGs we do not want to incur these costs?
Mr. Goldsmith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I would need to check the timing on the McCutcheon case. I did not jot that date down in my notes, but the litigation was commenced in April of 2014, and in reviewing the bills from the attorneys, I know that they started work on drafting the complaints in January of that year. And I also know that in about February or March is when McCutcheon came down, because I see in their billing information that is when they changed their legal theory. They didn't have McCutcheon to rely on. They were starting this lawsuit even before McCutcheon came down. And then they changed their theory to rely on McCutcheon, which ultimately led them to be successful. So I think that it was sometime early in 2014 that McCutcheon came down, and at that point I was aware of the case. I'm particularly the one that advises the board on these matters, but we did not feel that McCutcheon was on point to the extent that it was going to endanger our statute. I don't think the board considered specifically whether to make a legislative recommendation at that point. And it was actually quite soon after that that we were sued. The board meeting, of course, only once a month at most, and sometimes in those winter months we skip a meeting. I don't know whether we did that year or not.
Any other questions? Then we probably need a motion.
I'll move approval.
Okay. Senator Bach moves approval of that request. Or actually, it's approves
recommendation
for approval, I guess it would be. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails. And the next item, Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, request to use the general contingent appropriation. Commissioner France?
Chair, the second issue before the Legislative Advisory Commission, you should also have a packet labeled Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. This is a recommendation by the governor to transfer $100,000 from the general contingent appropriation to the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage to allow for payment of a legal settlement in the Rebecca Johnson versus Council on Black Minnesotans lawsuit. Now, the plaintiff in this case signed the settlement agreement on October 23rd. The agreement provides that payment must be issued to the plaintiff within 30 to 45 days of October the 23rd. The settlement agreement is for $200,000. The agreement identifies that at least $50,000 of the settlement amount relates to tort claims and is eligible for funding under the tort claims statute, Minnesota Statutes 3.736. So the first $50,000 of the settlement would be paid from the $161,000 that is appropriated to that account each fiscal year for MMB to make payments for tort claims. The next $50,000 would be paid from the agency's budget, and $100,000 would be transferred from the general contingent appropriation account. If the plaintiff prevails at trial and is awarded attorney's fees, the amount the state could owe could far exceed $500,000 in estimation. The governor believes it is prudent to accept this settlement, and we are here today so that the LAC can make a recommendation on the general contingent account transfer. So at this point, I'd ask for any, if you want any more testimony or if you'd like to make a recommendation.
Representative Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, well, I guess I'd have a few questions. I guess I don't know if there's someone from the council here or if I can.
You do, yes.
All right.
Could just state your name and position for the record.
My name is Benjamin McKay. I'm on the board of the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage.
Representative Knobloch?
Is it Mr.
Senator?
Yeah, my name is Carrie Dietzick. I'm a senator from Minneapolis, and I was recently appointed to the council.
Okay. Representative Knobloch?
Mr. McKay, is it?
McKay.
Okay. I guess, firstly, let me ask, what isn't going to be done by the council if we approve this that would otherwise be done? You're taking $50,000 from your not very large budget, and, you know, I guess it makes me wonder, I mean, did you really need that $50,000 in the first place, or what is not going to be done if we do this?
I'm not at liberty to answer that question. My position is representing the council today. Was appointed because at the time we needed to figure out whether we're going to mediate or what we were going to do. There are only three people on the board to do the work with the Attorney General's office, and I'm that person. As far as a plan B, if that's what you're asking, I can't answer that.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch. Again, I was just recently appointed in July or August, and so I was not there to in the end of last year when they had the budget discussions and when they came before the State Department and Representative Anderson's committee, so I don't know the full detail. I have gone through the budget with the new chair of the council and Lenore Madigan, the commissioner from Deputy Commissioner from Admin, and we did look at a few things of where we could potentially cut. The council had looked at expanding into hiring a part-time person and expanding into a few offices in rural Minnesota, and so those are two areas where we could cut. There also has been an opening in the staff that hasn't been filled, and I actually froze the budget in the, I think, at the end of September or the October meeting so that we would have this $50,000 to settle. And so right now the budget is frozen, so we didn't hire the council did not hire a staff person, and then right now it's frozen to hiring any additional part-time staff person.
All right. And
Representative Navarro.
Mr. Chairman, is it my understanding that one of the individuals that is part of this lawsuit is still an employee of the council?
That person would be.
I guess I was under the understanding that one of the, not the plaintiff, but one of the two named defendants, not Mr. McDonald, the other one, was perhaps still on the council or an employee of the council?
To the best of my knowledge, Mr. McDonald is the only person that was employed by the council who was on the claim.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm misinformed then. Okay. I don't have any other questions.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. And Mr. McKay, can you tell me, was Mr. McDonald part of the decision-making to settle, or was he at that point not part of the council, or maybe the senator can speak to that, either one?
He was not a part of the decision for mediation.
Okay. All right. And then I think, are we allowed, I'm not sure if we're allowed to name, there were two defendants in the case. There was Mr. McDonald, and then Wickham was part of it. So I think what Representative Knobloch is asking is if the Wickham individual is still employed by the council.
My understanding is she was a Department of Admin, or she was not employed by the council. I believe she was a Department of Admin employee who did something with the human resources on behalf of the council. So she was never employed by the council. I believe she was employed by admin, and I don't think she's at that job anymore. I may be mistaken.
Representative Anderson.
Commissioner, I know this is no longer part of your purview, but do we know? I mean, I'm trying to get an idea of what the scope is here on this situation.
Commissioner Franz. Or Mr. Secretary, I should
call. Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative. The current settlement that's been negotiated with the Attorney General's staff and through the council with respect to going forward is fairly, obviously it's limited to the matters that were raised in this initial lawsuit. I have to be a little careful. I'm concerned about going into matters beyond what have been disclosed in these papers and so far in terms of the attorney client confidential information. The Attorney General's office is available for additional questions if we need to bring them in, but I really can't go into any more detail than that.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. McKay or Senator Dietzick, so what steps has the council put in place to prevent something like this from happening in the future? Has there been training that's been done? What have you done with the existing employees to address this concern going forward?
I just found out this afternoon that we have a new executive director. And that would mean that the defendant, Mr. McDonald, has been replaced. I recall that during the process of making the decision to mediate or which way to move, there were discussions, board discussions, on proper Robert rules of order, if you will, for the office to undertake to do a better job that would help avoid situations like this. That's the best of the information that I can give you to make sure that this does not happen again.
Representative Anderson.
I'll pause if you go
ahead. Representative, I actually have a question myself before. Representative Anderson may have touched on this, but I'm curious as to what, just from a transparency perspective, what would become public about this situation if this settlement is approved. And obviously I have a concern that, you know, we're potentially paying out a pretty significant amount of money. What would be on record so that people can know what they got for that money or what the reason was that we're paying out that money?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the settlement itself, it depends in terms of how the Attorney General's office drafts that, but typically those settlements, unless they're specifically designated as confidential, would be subject to public disclosure in addition to the material that's been presented to you. That would be the extent of what was made public.
So that's this settlement agreement
mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Representative Knobloch.
Sure. Mr. McKay or Mr. Secretary, Commissioner, I don't understand that Mr. McDonald had sued the state. Is that still a active lawsuit? What's the status of that?
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The council voted, so that was the... I would say the old council. There was a new council put in place through new government appointees in September, October. At the September, October meeting, that council voted to remove itself from that lawsuit. My understanding is that Mr. McDonald, as an individual, can sue the state, but the council was removed from that, and I believe that there was a... That case was, at least as far as the council was, dismissed.
So the old, just to clarify, the old council was a party to that?
They were the ones that voted to sue, and then
the new council
removed that. We voted to undo that action.
Representative Knobloch.
But Mr. McDonald still has an action pending individually, does he not, or is that not the case?
To the best of my knowledge, it is not true. An individual suit from Mr. McDonald against the state is still in the process.
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, I can say that the state is in negotiations with the Attorney General's office about potential ongoing litigation, but that's all I can say at this time.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you. As far as what is public, the settlement does say that, you know, it is subject to Data Practices Act. And then there have been media reports in this, and I believe at least a portion of some of some of the discovery has been public as well.
Representative Anderson.
Commissioner, you had mentioned that the Attorney General's office is still in ongoing negotiations. Are there other victims out there? Is this just one of several? Or do we even know that? And what maybe the new council has dug into that? This gets back to my original question of what are we doing to make sure that this does not happen in the future with the new council that is put in place? But in particular, you said that they're in ongoing negotiations. What is that? What did you mean by that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I just think it's clear. I can be clear and say that I think the Attorney General's office is continuing to monitor the situation and is concerned, as you are, as any of us are, about how this matter goes forward, whether these issues are repeated in the future. So I simply cannot give any indication or factual analysis about what the Attorney General's office is engaged in, other than to let you know that they are monitoring the situation and they've been in discussions with us, but that's all been attorney-client privilege information I simply cannot share.
Senator?
Thank you. As far as the... for training going forward, the legislation that was passed last year that addresses the council, it does talk about the Department of Admin coming in and giving the new council members a whole list of training. It has to do with ethics. It has to do with all of that. And so the board itself will be going through a whole training. And then I'm assuming the new executive director will also take part in that, and then also probably have additional training that the state offers that has everything to do from sexual harassment training on down.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Senator. I guess my concern is we have this ongoing litigation that's hanging out there. We're relying on the Department of Administration that had one of their employees that's one of the defendants in the case. So I think that that opens up, you know, broader questions that I know from being the committee that has oversight over these issues, I'm a little concerned that we maybe need to dig more into this. I'm glad that there's a new counsel in place, and I know that sounds like you guys are doing your due diligence, but I think that there are some broader issues that we need to take a look at as a whole. And so I just got to tell you, I don't think that we should move forward with this. I think we need to dig a little bit more into this and make sure that we're on the right pace going forward so that we don't make the same mistake again. So those are my concerns.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I agree with you that we need to review this and make sure that what has happened in the past doesn't happen going forward. Our concern and why the new council voted to pursue settlement is because we are concerned that if this does go to trial, that there is a large settlement. And if you read the summary, it does say that there were statements and testimony taken in affidavits that are adverse to the council and the state's interest, and so that's why we recommended settling this. We are concerned that if we go to jury trial, it is a roll of the dice, and so that's why we decided to put this matter behind us and move forward. And we have been looking very closely at the budget and what the council's doing and what the council's role is going forward. So that's why we voted to do it. And so, you know, there may be some unknowns out there, but I think there are known unknowns out there if we don't settle this as well, and I think they may be larger.
Well,
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker and Senator, I appreciate that. I think when it came to the budget situation, we were expecting different things to come out of the council, and now that's changed given the new board that's in place and this lawsuit. And that certainly should have been part of the conversation in budgeting. So I have to look at it from that perspective as the chair. And I have committee members that haven't had the opportunity to weigh in on this, and I think that they would like to have some feedback. We had extensive hearings on just the Council of Black Minnesotans at that time. That's what it was called. You know, so I think this just kind of plays into the overall concerns that members had. It was Carolyn Lane's bill that we put in part of it. So I think those are my concerns. I think that this is a bigger issue than just let's quick get done and be over with this. Plus, I think it's about transparency, as the speaker had mentioned. We want to make sure that the public is made aware of what's going on and what our steps are to address the concerns, too, to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just ask a few questions, maybe directed toward the commissioner. It might have been nice to have had, I assume the AG who was involved is not here. Is
it? Mr. Chair, Senator, they're not here. They were invited.
So I have to admit, it might have been helpful to have had an attorney here from the Attorney General's office, but absent that, so has a summons and complaint been filed and served in this matter?
I'm sorry, say that again, sir.
Has a summons and complaint been filed and served in this matter?
Senator Dietzick?
I don't know. Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not sure.
Okay. But this was an agreement that was promulgated between attorney for the plaintiff and attorney for the state, i.e. the Attorney General's office. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes.
And Mr. McKay, when were you appointed to the council or to the preceding council?
Mr. McKay?
I began serving on the council in April of 2013. My term is up in January of 2017.
So that was a couple of years ago. And Senator Dietzick, you were appointed this fall?
Correct.
And so we have whatever's taking place within the council, which I assume has been going on for a period of time. If this action, or if we're not quite sure, if we're not sure if there's a summons and complaint that's been filed.
There is a court case.
Okay, so that was my question.
Yeah, it's on the bottom of page
Have I missed
three.
That? Oh, okay. And so, Mr. Chairman, so there's a Ramsey County District Court file. It appears it was filed in calendar year 2014, which suggests whatever was going on probably predates both members of the council who are here right now. And without trying to get into details, am I mistaken that, Sir Deasy, you're a pretty recent member, Mr. McKay? I'm inferring that a lot of this took place before you were on the council. Is that a fair statement?
That's accurate.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I understand your concerns as chair of the Appropriations Division with jurisdiction over this council and the other councils of color. But this puts us in a fairly awkward position to the extent that we have a legislative obligation to work with whether it be a small agency like this or a large agency like MnDOT and Human Services in terms of the operation of the state agencies and what's going on. But where we get involved with litigation, which is not necessarily known to everybody, particularly if it's a question of settlement. I mean, oftentimes there are settlements that are promulgated where the record is sealed. You can't get access to that. So even if you were to bring people in through legislative subpoenas and put them under oath, obviously that happens very, very rarely in the Minnesota legislature, you couldn't compel an answer. And in this instance, we have a settlement that was promulgated between plaintiff's attorney, Mr. Cooper, and the state of Minnesota as represented by the Attorney General's office. And I think what becomes difficult for us is to walk into the middle of that and say, just a second, we want to take a look at all the ramifications. I think certainly during our budget process in the state legislature, to the extent that we can take a look as to how it impacts an agency would be one thing. But to suggest we're not going to provide a recommendation to take care of the settlement, I think becomes pretty difficult. Where we then interfere with not an adjudication, but some type of judicial process. I'm not quite sure how we do that and not set up a line of dominoes that fall. At what point, I'm trying to think of a precedent. I'll go back to, looking down this table. I don't know. I'm going to play back in the good old days. I think this is the first year I was a division chair, which was State Department's when it was a somewhat larger division. And there was a proposed settlement involving the Mille Lacs Tribal Council and the state of Minnesota. This was the famous Mille Lacs settlement, which was rejected, and as a consequence, the state then went through the litigation and obviously lost badly, ultimately in the U.S. Supreme Court. And we were asked at that time to approve a settlement. Now, again, some of the parties involved backed out of the settlement, so it took away our decision. We didn't have to make a decision. But we asked a number of questions up to a certain point. And at some point, you have to trust the attorneys who are involved with this to reach a decision that's fair for the state of Minnesota. If we back away from every settlement that's made, whether it be something like this or whether it be the claims bill, the common claims brought by, say, prisoners, if a prisoner has been injured while incarcerated, something like that, it just seems to me it sets up some real difficulty. It's been alluded to that if we were not to do this, there is the potential for an even greater claim to be brought against the state of Minnesota. Now, we're being asked for a recommendation, so I think Commissioner, if I'm not mistaken, you arguably could go ahead and make the settlement. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes. The statute requires that we receive a recommendation and then we can proceed. The recommendation is advisory only.
So you can act accordingly depending on what the recommendation is. But I just think it sets a bad precedent if we are to reject out of hand settlements made through the Attorney General's office. And, is the next step that the legislature has the final say over settlements made, which would raise just a host of questions. But I think rejecting – it's one thing if we get an LAC request that involves a direct appropriation, say an agency needs more money because of a deficit or something. But as we get into the judicial process, I think it's, to use the cliche, a bit of a slippery slope.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, on page one of the settlement, paragraph four, I guess, it talks about if funds are not authorized. It talks about the status of and discuss whether court deadlines need be adjusted. What are the court deadlines that we're facing if we don't initiate or authorize the settlement? Court soon, or where are we at in that? I mean, I understand that, and I agree with Senator Cohen, there's, we may have significant liability far in excess of what the settlement is, and I face this situation when I took over as leader of the Senate, and the Senate had a lawsuit against it that had been going on for the better part of 2 years, I think, and we made a decision to settle that rather than continue to pursue it. I thought it was in the Senate's interest. Commissioner, what are what are the court deadlines that potentially are that might need to be adjusted?
Mr. Chair, Senator, if this agreement is not authorized within 45 days of that initial, then October 23rd, then the next phase will be the court will schedule this matter for trial. So the parties will, I don't know if they have a scheduling conference set up yet or not, but that will be the next stage, is where the parties get together and schedule this case to proceed to trial. And then all the normal procedures that go into effect at that time will begin, whether it's additional discovery or a trial date will be set.
So all the discovery is done, and it's just a matter of the next step is actually scheduling conference?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes. Is I don't know if all the discovery is done, but I do know the next step will be a scheduling conference to schedule this for trial.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you. On the first page, under Nature of Urgency, it says the case would proceed to a jury trial on December 21st, 2015.
Mr. Chair, yeah, Senator, I didn't know the date had been set, but I knew it was going to go to the scheduling right away. So December 21 would be the trial date. It's on the first page of the...
Sure, it's on your narrative, not in the actual settlement agreement.
The nature of the urgency paragraph.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
And just another comment, and again, this is more anecdotal than... But the other thing is I think I said that we can take a little bit of a risk if our recommendation to the... Commissioner is to not to do this, and if the commissioner then feels substantively or politically that he'd be well advised and to take that recommendation to the governor that this is not agreed to. My experience has been that judges don't take kindly to things like that. I note that the trial judge in this case is Judge Leary. I've appeared in front of Judge Leary a number of times. He's a very, very excellent member of the Ramsey bench. Also happens to be a constituent of mine, which is irrelevant. But Judge Leary is a no-nonsense judge. And if he thinks that there was a settlement promulgated in good faith by the parties, then backed out of by one of the parties, I think Judge Leary would distinguish attorney general versus governor's administration versus state legislature. He'd say defendant state of Minnesota backed out of what I thought was this agreement, I think he would come down that much harder on us at a much higher level. And to be fair, I talked about something a number of years ago. Let me talk about something that's quite current. I'm waiting for Judge Frank to someday come down very hard on us. I think judges feel they have an obligation, and I think in this particular instance, where there has been a settlement promulgated, and I assume counsel has said, okay, we have to go back to the state now to the LAC, whatever. I just think it raises other concerns. And I can tell you, I've been in front of Judge Leary a number of times. I wasn't aware that he had jurisdiction over this until I saw the stuff in front of me a few minutes ago. But I would be cautious in, since we represent the state of Minnesota, backing away from that agreement.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senator Cohen, you know, I appreciate your comments and your concerns. I'm a little concerned that from the public standpoint that they have not been provided with adequate information. And it kind of feels like a cover-up, if you will. I'm not saying that that is not the case that's happening. But my concern is that we have a situation that this was a public case that was filed back in 2014. At no point did anyone raise this issue in the State Government Finance Committee that this was pending, that this was an issue out there, that there was a financial obligation. I remember on many occasions asking the then director of their budget request that they had, what would the money be going for? And he could not clearly identify how the money would be allocated within his budget, even though I asked repeatedly. So from that perspective, I'm concerned that there just has not been enough information provided to the members of the committee that are responsible for that budget area. But on top of that, I was wondering if Senator Dietzick could outline for me a little more clearly, what did you mean that there are certain things within this case that would not be in the best interest of the state or the council? Can you elaborate on that, please?
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you. It is my understanding in the depositions, there were numerous depositions taken. I don't know if I need to be in the mic here. There were numerous depositions taken, and it is my understanding that in some of those depositions taken, as it says here in the front line, your front page, there were comments made that were adverse to the council's interest. And so there were, and again, I'm not revealing any attorney-client privilege because they didn't share a lot of it. A lot of this has been public. There has been news stories on it. But as my understanding, there were neutral parties, so parties that were not either attached to the council or friends with Rebecca Johnson, the plaintiff, but there were neutral parties who stated that they overheard some of her allegations. And so they affirmed what she was saying. And so we believe that that would be potentially adverse to the council. And so what the council, the new council, decided is that we think it is the fiscally responsible thing to do is to just settle this matter. And the documents are, I mean, there have been news stories on this case. There's at least one news story on the case because I did Google it, and it is my understanding that the depositions are not sealed, or at least several of them have not been sealed. So it is public. I haven't looked into that. I've spent more time. I spent hours going over the budget as this matter was approaching us, and we were asked by the AG to consider, do we want to consider a settlement? I literally sat down with the Department of Admin and went line by line on the budget to see if we could do this, how much money could we come up with?
Mr. Speaker and Senator, I appreciate all the work that you're putting in for this, and I think that's helpful. My concern is going forward, it sounds like we still have some pending litigation out there. Are we going to be back here a year from now, outside of the legislative process, outside of the input of the State Government Finance Committee members, and outside of public testimony? Are we going to be coming back and doing another LAC, a contingent fund request for another settlement? And I have concerns with that, because that's kind of sounds the direction that it's going to take, because I haven't been given any more information than this first initial one, but it sounds like there's other ones outstanding. And that puts the council if it's going to be another $50,000 that you're going to have to pay or however much it'll be. And it also puts the overall State Government Finance Committee, we are in charge of the contingent fund as well and the tort claims fund. That's all within our jurisdiction. And so you're asking us to budget outside of the legislative process where the public has a chance to provide input. And I have concerns with that.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Anderson, I don't disagree with you, but I would also say that there are, you know, there are multiple state employees and multiple state governments that and state departments that there, you know, may be pending lawsuits out there that we're not aware of. So I wouldn't, that's unfortunately not just specific to this council. I can only say that as a new member of the council that has a large majority of new members, we are going to be going through training. And I know I've participated in my other jobs and in this job on additional ethics training, sexual harassment training, what's appropriate or not. And so I believe that the new executive director will go through that and all of the, you know, new board members. So I think as a council, we are taking steps to make sure, at least for our little world here, that nothing else, that hopefully going forward nothing happens. I can't, you know, I can't say for at least the council if there's other cases that might come up or not. But I also can't say, I mean, I'm on several finance committees in the Senate, and I don't know if there's cases in those jurisdictions that I'm not aware of either. So I understand where you're coming from, where we set a budget and we look at it, and there's all sorts of unknowns. So, you know, I think, as I said before, the council just thought that this was the most fiscally responsible thing to do.
Commissioner, can you outline what now? If the LAC recommends approval of this or does not recommend approval, what are the possible? If we didn't recommend approval, what are the possible scenarios that could take place?
Mr. Chair, the recommendations from the LAC are advisory to the to this process, so we can proceed to make adjustments based on the recommendations, or we can proceed to implement the recommendations that we put before you if the vote is negative.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Then, Senator Brown.
I'll move approval. I guess we probably should have a roll call.
Okay. Roll call has been requested. Senator Bach moves approval. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, then the secretary will take the roll.
In any particular order? Okay. I'm just going to go down the row, if that's okay, Mr. Chair. Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Speaker Dowd?
No.
Chair Knobloch?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
You were going to say Johnson, weren't you?
I'm not used to taking a roll call. Recommendation would be 3 against and 2 in favor of this going forward.
Okay. That being the vote, the motion to recommend approval does not prevail.
Mr. Chair, there are no other items on the agenda for the LAC.
Okay. Anything else from the members? Very good. Then we are adjourned. Thank you.